seen post-apocalypse, post-election, post-Trump. And by the way, we're going to put a disclaimer up here right at the front. Anything we say against Trump, against that, the person that supposedly won some sort of election, not the popular vote. I mean, not most people didn't vote for this guy, but he got in, right, through some something called American, quote, I'm doing the rabbit ear things or the, you know, the air quotes, democracy. So we have this new regime. And I would just like to say that, or make sure that when you hear our critique of Trump, and you're going to hear a lot of it, it's not just critique, it's what to do. We've already organized demonstrations of tens of thousands, believe it or not, around the country. And I'm going to talk about that against Trump. And they've been brilliant demonstrations. A lot of people have said about this election, it woke me up. And by saying that, they're not saying they're doubling down on Hillary or the Democratic Party or any of that. They're like, it woke me up about the nature of the system. I want to check out you people, whoever you are, Socialist Alternative. We got 500 people writing in a 48-hour span, I think it was, writing in online. We got people, tens of thousands of people, taking up our call to go out and demonstrate in various cities around the country. And so this has woken people up. I'm not saying that it would have necessarily taken a Trump victory or that it's a positive thing that Trump won. I'm not saying that at all, actually, to wake people up, because they would have been woken up in other ways, we believe, in terms of our analysis pre-election, post-election, both, that there are some fundamental problems with the system. And therefore, people are going to, unfortunately, learn through our shared hard experience and our shared struggle that fundamental change is needed from capitalism to democratic socialism. But what I started to say was, when you hear our analysis of Trump, when you hear our ideas about fighting Trump and our actions that we've already accomplished and intend to do more of in fighting Trump, this is not a backhanded endorsement of the Democratic Party or Clinton at all. There is a symbiotic relationship between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They're both corporate dominated parties. I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't hear, Clinton trash capitalism, say there was an alternative. In fact, I like a lot of people, you know, sat through those debates, watched those debates, you know, as painful as it was prior to the election. I saw Clinton give praise at times to Trump as a capitalist, as a businessman. She didn't use the word capitalist, she used the word businessman. I saw neither of the candidates endorsing, embracing, doing anything to really engage with Black Lives Matter, with the no DAPL protests, to even question the aims of U.S. imperialism and U.S. domination overseas militarily. Nobody questioned that. Not even Sanders, actually, back when he was running, really had much to say about U.S. imperialism. We'll get into that a little later. But my point is that, and I'm not saying a lot of people are making this mistake. We haven't, in my personal organizing around anti-Trump stuff since he got elected, I have not seen people too confused about the fact that they get it. They kind of get it. You know, most people kind of get it. It's like, oh, you're criticizing Trump. You want to fight Trump. You want to make sure Trump and his emboldened right wing nut jobs, when they go after people, that there's resistance, there's fight back, there's defense. Yes, yes, yes. They kind of get that we're not talking about Hillary or the Democrats or any kind of way to respond to Trump. Short term, medium term, long term. The best way to fight Trump is to build a real left in this country, to build a real popular working class and youth based mass left movement, to drag politics to the left decisively. So it's beyond the pale to be a candidate like Trump. So it's beyond the pale to have a virulent right wing out there getting its wind in its sails from a Trump victory. And we'll explain that more during the show. What we mean by that, why the de facto position is not support for another corporate political party if you are criticizing and fighting a corporate candidate. Now, again, don't mistake this for a crude analysis of, oh, the Republicans and Democrats are exactly the same. They're not. They're just like the ruling class is not a monolithic class, right? There are differences of opinion among how to rule us. There are differences of opinion at the top among how to control us. There are differences of opinion about moral. There's moral differences. There are differences between the Democrats and the Republicans. And historically, one thing you need to look at, if you're all interested in figuring this out, is that those differences shift. You know, right now, yes, you can say the Democratic Party, at least in terms of rhetoric, not in terms of policy so much, but in terms of rhetoric, is not inflaming anti-racist sentiment, is not, for the most part, is not inflaming anti-immigrant sentiment, although more immigrants were deported under the Obama regime than any other. So again, it's different between rhetoric and policy. I'm just saying in terms of rhetoric, yes, it's better that the Democrats don't give any kind of strength, obvious or explicit strength to right-wing elements in this country in the way that the Trump rhetoric and now policies will give and have given to the right wing. I mean, when we were organizing, just a slight digression, when we were organizing an anti-Trump rally in Worcester, and this has happened all over the country, we received threats. You know, those sick, crazy, anonymous, right-wing, fascist, nationalist threats, you know? You know, we're going to show up, we're going to do this, we're going to plow you down with our trucks, you know, this or that, you know? But in the event, right, we were able to organize over 400 people out in a city like Worcester, which is fairly quiescent politically. Democrats control it, you know, but they're still, you know, not still, I mean, that results in a sort of business as usual conservative patina over everything, even though the, you know, if again, a common thread here is going to be liberalism means not something radical as sometimes we're led to believe, or not something left as sometimes we're led to believe, because they want to push politics so far to the right that liberal seems left, and liberal is not left. Liberal is, I believe in the system, I think the system can be reformed, I think a capitalism with a happy face is okay. And some of the liberals now are accommodating to Trump. We reject that completely, of course. Some of the liberals are, many liberals are, and liberalism itself is the idea of capitalism with a happy face, basically. And a lot of liberals, in terms of the intellectuals, in terms of the people that form policy and so on, they are doing quite well. They're part of the 1%, or they're pretty close, and they can handle a Clinton administration without breaking a sweat. No problem. No problem for them. If Clinton got elected and Democrats did another 8 years of neoliberalism like they did under Obama or under Clinton, Bill Clinton, the millions of upper middle class and straight up ruling class bourgeois liberals would have been just fine with that. They would have made money off it. Are you kidding? Not just fine with it. They would have prospered, and they have prospered under conditions that the vast majority of Americans cannot tolerate. The precariat, the trillion-dollar student debt bubble, the things facing, the problems, the decline in living standards, the frustrations facing the vast majority of Americans. And if you get in your head a picture of a stereotypical white working-class person with a pickup truck and a... Don't do that. That's what the media is doing. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. The average working person, when we say working class, we mean primarily women. We mean people of color. We mean, yes, white workers. We mean a whole rainbow of people, different genders, different racial and ethnic backgrounds. There's even among people that are well-meaning, that want to do something for working people, that do want to try to analyze the elections in a way that doesn't obviate and erase class, social class, because you can't understand anything in America without that. But you also can't understand anything in America without understanding, trying to understand or understanding racism and how that's used and how, where that comes from. But basically, you know, don't have this cliched version of the working class. And also working class from the standpoint of socialists, from the standpoint of social alternative, it's not necessarily someone with a job. You know, working class can mean you're in that, or it does mean for us, it means you're in that class of people that needs to sell your labor to survive. You really have sort of, to have a decent life, you need a decent paying job. Now, who does that leave out in this system, right? That leaves out, that acknowledges, that's supposed to acknowledge, it's supposed to be an explanation of, that it includes people that unfortunately can't sell their labor. The capitalists aren't buying in certain places, right? They're exploiting the hell out of people every day. That's the nature of capitalism, exploiting their labor. And that includes, by the way, brain power, not just physical power. And yet they will not hire you for some reason, right? You cannot find a job, or you can't find a decent paying job. You're still working class. You're so out of the system, you've given up. You can't even apply for unemployment. You can't get a job, and you survive how you survive. You know, maybe it's a low-level crime. Maybe it's a charity. Maybe it's off of friends and neighbors and family. You're still working class. You know, you're still in the working class, or you're trying to be, you know. And so working class is a broad definition, including people of color, obviously, including the majority of workers, women, including of the working class. I'm sorry. Workers, it gets a little tricky when you talk about who actually has a job at any one time. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people, as you probably know, millions of people that have withdrawn, quote unquote. This is a funny word. I don't think it's a choice. I think it's pushed upon them, obviously. Withdrawn from the labor force. They can't find a job, and it costs money, in case you didn't know this, upper middle class liberals or conservatives, it costs money to find a job. Anyone that says to a poor person, anyone says to a homeless person, hey, get a job, the retort should be, give me the money to get a job and I'll get a job. Because it costs money to get a job. It costs money to have a place where you can get computer access, where you can get mail access. It costs money to dress a certain way. It costs money to have food and your thoughts straight to go in and go through some bullcrap interview. Another digression. I've been in the same job for 30 years. Why? Well, one reason is I've experienced unemployment. I've experienced kind of a homelessness, really, really couch surfing. I don't want to exaggerate it, but it scared me. I was really close to the street. And these did exactly what the system wants them to do. They scared the hell out of me, right? I have to admit it. They scared the hell out of me. So when I got a job, I hung on to it. And I've had part-time jobs in addition to the full-time job, like a lot of other people. And like a lot of other people, that has constricted my choices, constricted my relationships, constricted my family time, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but you do it to survive, hoping not to fall back into that unemployment thing where you really wonder what's going to happen next. Not to be in that situation where you can't make the rent. You don't know how you're going to make the rent the next month. That is scary. And I don't say scary in the sense of how everyone's saying they're scared of Trump. I'm saying scary at a root base level that you know is going to hurt you. Now, Trump, yes, we know is going to hurt a lot of people and so on. But the proper way to fight is to, yes, acknowledge fear, but get over that quick and get into organizing. That's another point for later. But anyway, a digression after a digression. I apologize. But anyway, back to the main point is that vast differential, a big look at the American working class. We're talking about all sorts of people, not just some sort of stereotype in the corporate media in their analysis of who voted for Trump, who's responsible for Trump and all that. So anyway, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. If you just tuned in, talking music from a working class Democratic Socialist perspective, and we're going to be here, we are here every other week on WMFO. And if you want to listen live stream or get at least one of our shows in archive form, they only archive the last 2 weeks, that would be WMFO.org. And if you want more information about the show, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook, or more information about Socialist Alternative, go to SocialistAlternative.org. And the big news is, of course, the elections, but the big news is also the right after the elections, within 24 hours, within 48 hours, and within a few days, et cetera, within a week, there were massive demonstrations around the country, many organized by Socialist Alternative directly. And we thank all the people that participated, obviously. And there are other demonstrations by other groups, and there's just this massive Trump is not my president outrage, and it's perfectly justified. Any liberal, any conservative, and they're saying this now, especially the pundits, the paid propagandists, the corporate media whores and so on, and the corporate media, they are saying, hey, give Trump a chance. Hey, let's see what happens. Hey, he is the president. You know, all those kind of arguments, completely false. Completely false. Again, Trump didn't win the popular vote. The electoral college system is a joke. Should have been done away with decades ago, decades and decades and decades ago, the American democracy is riddled with corporate money making choices between a rock and a hard place. I mean, this was the worst. Before Trump got elected, you heard the following refrain, and it was very true. This is the best they can come up with. This is the worst choice ever, right? I mean, this is just a horrible, horrible choice. Either Clinton, who had a very clear record of corporate subservience and allegiance and promotion of corporate interests, with horrible results from her support of her husband's administration, from her time in the Senate, voting for the Iraq War and so on, from her time as Secretary of State, bombing the crap out of Syria and Libya and so on. The record was there. And by the way, this is going to be a big digression, so hold on to your digressive hats or whatever. I have to say one of the most disappointing things of the election, not unforeseen, not a surprise. I've been through this rodeo many times, or this ping pong match many times. And basically, but seeing people that consider themselves left wing in some vague definition, or straight up liberal, but consider that some sort of progressive stance, which it usually is not, by the way, but they would argue the Clinton case, they would argue a vote for the Democrats in such a crude way that they embraced the most conservative stances that years ago, say under Eisenhower or something, would have been Republican politics. They embraced the nationalism and jingoism and xenophobia and the flag. Look at the DNC itself, the Democratic National Convention. Huge, such a flag-waving fest. When was the last time you even saw the Republicans do that kind of nationalism? I mean, they do it. They wallow in it. But I mean, this was ridiculous. This was over the top, right? So I would get in arguments with people, face to face on Facebook and so on, and they would pull out the lamest, most conservative arguments for supporting Clinton. She has experience. Yeah, I just outlined some of her experience. It was experience that was anti-working class and anti, the developing world. It was experience that was, if you looked into it more deeply, it went against every bit of rhetoric Clinton talked about. Support for women, well, under the Clinton administration, the first administration, access to abortions fell in every county around the U.S., and they were, in most counties around the U.S., and they were pushing states' rights in a vague way, and they were qualifying abortion access in various ways in terms of rhetoric of actually making the choice to other aspects of having the choice, having abortion rights, women having control over their own bodies. There was, again, on racism, the Clinton administration using coded racist rhetoric to get elected and then backing the drug war, backing mass incarceration policies. And again, where was Clinton? This is Hillary Clinton now I'm talking about. Where was she when Black Lives Matter was exploding? She would always make those safe, careful speeches about the police, this and that, basically defending a very militarized, racist police force around the country. And you had a systematic embrace of, really mainstream conservative politics to the point where Clinton herself and Democratic Party and people I would argue with then had to argue and back up everything the Obama administration did. So in other words, they forgot any critique of the Obama administration. They think this is tactical. They think this is like a good tactic. Let's just lie and ignore and deny, So the whole 8 years, there's nothing you could critique about the Obama administration, even if you supported it. You don't see what we're talking about when there was no support for EFCA, despite that big promise that there was all these massive deportations, that the living standards stagnated for working people, that all sorts of policies came out that hurt workers, the big bailout for the big corporations, but not for working people, et cetera, et cetera. You could go Black Lives Matter, even though a black president, no support for Black Lives Matter and the whole anti-racist movement. So you could go through a whole list, and which we should over and over and over again, because there's enormous revisionism happening, started actually months ago, about the Obama administration, erasing everything that people disliked about it. And then you had Clinton openly saying, I'm trying to extend the gains or whatever, there'd be different words thrown in there of the Obama administration. So in other words, a defense of the status quo, a virulent defense of the status quo among Clinton supporters, right? And so where does that get you if you are dissatisfied, if your life is going down the tubes, if you're or about to, if you see the need for fundamental change or at least something in that direction, even if you see the need for an alternative political party, all of a sudden you have people that consider themselves liberals, consider themselves left wing, doing everything they can to stop you from thinking about an alternative, to stop you from having a realistic critique of the previous eight years, to stop you from, you know, having a reading, actually just opening up some, you know, articles and figuring out what Clinton has stood for, and they retreat into supporting, you know, the you know, really, you know, for the most part, conservative arguments, embracing nationalism, embracing the system of capitalism in so many words, sometimes openly, you know. They would do anything to get Clinton reelected in terms of their argumentation. And it got sickening. That was so there's, I would say there's a whole layer of like sort of liberals, mostly upper middle class, but not totally, working class liberals as well, who they had a big setback in consciousness in this election period. It's not just the mistaken Trump voters, which we'll get into in a minute, but it's this layer of liberals that pulled out the really conservative arguments, even reactionary in some cases. Who cares about, you know, the Middle East? You know, who cares about the racist police? You know, everything, everyone in line for Clinton. And the fact that so many people didn't vote and so many people didn't buy that line should not be a surprise. It shouldn't be the least bit surprising. It's intolerable. I could never vote for a corporate candidate. I never will. And, you know, I'm not alone there, believe it or not, even though not everyone with me on that one is a socialist. That's not, some people have reached their limit. Most people that are signing up to vote, that are registering to vote, they're registering as independents. Okay. At least that was the latest info I have prior to the election, but not that long before the election. So it was still happening way into the election cycle, into the election period, the campaigning period. And I'm not saying that all independents are progressive. That's not true. They swing around. Some are, you know, some swing around and vote different ways. There's this whole thesis now. You'll hear, I heard it on a conservative radio show the other day on WBZ radio. This huge radio signal. It's also CBS TV. It's a voice of horrible corporate propaganda. And they have like their announcers do commercials all the time, so it's like intimately linked with the corporate profits and so on. So they say, well, you know, what's the big deal? All you people out protesting against Trump, that would be me and Socialist Alternative, a lot of other people. What's the big deal? Every 8 years, whenever there's an 8-year regime, you know, it kind of turns over and goes to the opposite party or the other party. That's the way they put it. Everything is in, you know, notice everything is in the duopoly terms, the two-party system terms. Can't think outside that envelope, that tiny, narrow, thin, disastrously poisoned envelope of the two-party system. No. Can't even think about that. So just accept that there's this, you know, ping pong game going on, that if you're dissatisfied with 8 years of one corporate regime, you'll vote for 8 years or 4 years of another corporate regime. So it was a rock and a hard place for working people in this election. It was just horrible, you know, and now getting into the Trump supporters, right? Am I making this argument that you will hear on the corporate media somewhat and even in alternative media? Am I making an argument that the Trump vote represented some sort of protest vote against the neoliberal policies, the pro-capitalist policies, the drive down living standards policies? Use your term. All of them are inexact, but that the corporate media uses globalization, the reaction to globalization, all that. Those are all fairly inexact terms. I mean, it's basically capitalism putting forward its agenda and putting forward its policies without resistance, without significant resistance at all from either of their own parties, the corporate parties. Rhetoric, you can't just go by rhetoric. Bernie Sanders had some good rhetoric against some of the most, not all, but some of the most egregious things happening to people in the last 8 years and beyond, you know, and before that. And Clinton picked up some of that rhetoric, especially when debating Sanders or right after Sanders withdrew and supported Clinton. But it was not, you know, people could see through it. People could see through it, you know, because say on paper you're for $15 minimum wage. But then when you speak, you talk about just a higher minimum wage. And you're not really pressing the 15 all the time. Both Clinton and Sanders, Sanders and Warren came to the $15 an hour demand very, very late, like during the campaign, pre-campaign time. And then once Sanders started to promote it, Clinton started to promote it in some of her speeches. But the minute Sanders retreated and went back to where it was obvious he was going to go, back to the Democratic Party, and supporting the elites of the Democratic Party, then in turn supporting the corporate agenda, really, and the big corporations, then Clinton de-emphasized, and that's putting it politely, a lot of the populist, and this would be progressive populist, or even in small letters and with the big thing, finger quotes again, left populism of Sanders, you know, that was drawn back on, and it became just how great she was and how rotten Trump was. And there's a little bit of truth in how rotten Trump was, but is that enough? Is that enough, you know, for people? No, it's not enough. It's not enough. So people sat it out. People voted, you know, Democrats jumped over and voted Republican. That's not talked about much, but it's there. So getting into this question of protest vote, yeah, in a certain sense, it's some of the votes for Trump were protest votes of people that were not doing well, obviously. This is not news to a lot of people, not doing well in the previous Obama administrations. And that would be including people of color. I mean, Trump was so racist and so horrible that, of course, he knocked out the vast majority, a vast majority of votes from people of color, but you still had 8% black vote for Trump. You still had a percentage of Latino vote, which I think last I checked, that was still being discussed how high that was. And then you had, of course, the white vote, which is often prescribed or said that it is, it was, you know, Joe six pack with the pickup truck and all that. And then you look at the data more closely, and it turns out it was people making more money than Joe Sixpack could ever dream of that voted for Trump. Plus, yes, some people that were you know, making a little more than Joe Sixpack. And then you had, yes, of course, you had some Joe Sixpack voters and so on. But the vast majority of the so-called white working class did not vote for Trump, but a big chunk did. And I'm not trying to erase that at all. Just opposite. We want to highlight and talk about it because figure it out. It's not hard to figure out, in my opinion. The element of protest voting there exists, but it exists on a plane of ignorance so profound that it's scary. Of course, it's rotten. It doesn't come from nowhere. If you have a system extolling the virtues of entrepreneurship and capitalism, and a small left, and no mass left-wing party, it's inevitable every election, no matter what the rotten choices are from the two corporate parties, every election is marked by low-class consciousness among working-class people in this country. America's infamous for the low-class consciousness among American workers. You don't register class conscious based on cultural stereotypes and cultural icons. You might get a little hint here or there from that kind of stuff. But that's not really where the pedal hits the metal. That's really not what matters. If somebody self-identifies with cultural items or cultural habits or whatever, it's how they are forced to live based on their income. It's how they self-identify, in not in terms of like you know, identity politics and so on, but how they, you know, whether or not they understand where they are in the system, and if they understand the system at all, if they have any class consciousness when they vote. Now, if Americans had class consciousness, a lot of them, when they vote, they would not vote for Trump. Trump is the enemy of the working class. Trump is a capitalist and a racist, and capitalism and racism is part of the capitalist foundation in this country, has caused enormous death, murder, suffering, and horror, and kept American working people really ignorant, really ignorant for the most part, not totally, but for the most part. So the Trump vote, you know, you have to really qualify this protest aspect of it. There's a high element of racism in it. You can't dance around that. This is a racist country, and there's a high element of racism in the votes for Trump, because either people embraced that voted for Trump, and this would include working people that voted for Trump. Again, not all working people voted for Trump. Most did not, but there was a chunk that did. Those working people that voted for Trump, they either are racist and bought that racist, the racist, you know, coded language from Trump and not so coded language from Trump against immigrants and so on, or they just did. They're not really, really racist, but they just didn't care enough about the effects the racist rhetoric would have, the issues that black people and others, obviously everyone, should be out, you know, fighting against the racist police, the militarized police force, the, you know, issues of, you know, you go through the whole list. Still segregation in schooling and redlining in housing, and still percentage-wise more poverty among people of color, or most people of color, et cetera, et cetera. The system is obviously, you want to talk about a rigged system. It's not exactly the way Trump was talking about it. Obviously, it's rigged against people of color, especially black people, in terms of the special oppression of black people due to the, you know, and it, I don't want to get totally into the history here because of time, but due to the, you know, after slavery and after defeating Reconstruction, there was no reparations, no attempt to make up for that, starting at complete zero. You know, if you want to look at it in a slightly simplistic way, in terms of the aggregate wealth over generations, and then Jim Crow and the terror of lynching and so on, and then coming up to the North facing more racism in the 20s and 30s and so on, to the point where, you know, again, those statistics on that we've talked about before about net wealth between black workers and white workers in general, in terms of percentage of the of each population, if you break it down by racial categorization, then you have a higher percentage, much higher percentage of black workers, for example, with very low net worth, not able to get together the vast amounts of money you need to get a house and so on and so forth. So these statistics fluctuate, and there certainly is a black bourgeois now, black upper middle class, and they do their politics accordingly. Unfortunately, but for the vast majority of working people, it should have been obvious that Trump's racism was not representing any sort of alternative, that it was just a divide and conquer move, and it was just a way to have scapegoats ready for blaming for the rotten policies and the dangerous policies that the Trump administration will try to implement. Now, I say will try because there will be resistance. Again, he lost the popular vote. There's no mandate for Trump. There's no real mandate for Trump. The right wing is emboldened, right? The far right, the white supremacists, white nationalists, they're out there, you know, trying to intimidate people. You've seen the reports and so on. That can be fought. That is being fought. That will be fought. That will be defeated. That will be defeated. And there will be a lot of blocking of Trump's issues, not from the Democrats in Congress who are already talking about collaboration with Trump, will be fought in the streets by mass movements, not relying on the NGO leaders, you know, the Democratic Party establishment. That's a mistake. Now, one of the right wingers wrote into us in Worcester and said, well, would you have been protesting if Hillary got elected? Would you have been out in the streets immediately when Hillary got elected? Probably not. Probably not, actually, because with Clinton and the Democrats, it's a more subtle attack, and a lot of people would not have understood the need. I mean, if we had if we thought that consciousness was at a certain level, yes, we would have been on the street immediately when Clinton got elected, because Clinton is a corporate candidate, not representing working people. But Clinton also did not run, the Democrats did not run on an obvious racist program. There's elements of racism when you dig, but not when you dig into it, but not an obvious explicit racist program. And it would have taken a while for the effects of the Clinton administration to be seen clearly by sections of the working class enough to go out and protest, right? And who knows what would have triggered it, but there would have been ample opportunities under a Clinton administration for people to see, oh, wait a minute, I voted against my interests, and now I have to go do something about that. And some people would have understood that and done something about it. Now, back to Trump supporters, there is this narrative happening in the corporate media, and it's frustrating for a lot of people, of a sort of crude class narrative. Now, it's good, I suppose, from some angle that, you know, the term working class is maybe out there a little more. The idea that not everybody did well during the Obama administration is out there a little more. You know, so in a way, it's a continuation of that, of what Occupy accomplished. Excuse me, of getting inequality to be actually talked about a little bit in the corporate media, even, but certainly among in the alternative media. So I suppose not all the heavy-handed analysis that is very reductionist to social class happening right now and ignoring, for the most part, racism is there's a, you know, a silver lining there somewhere. But the bad thing is that obviously, like we started to say a minute ago, you have a certain number of a big number of Trump's voters that are voting on sort of a latent racism or explicit racism or not caring about issues relating to immigrants and relating to African-Americans and relating to Latinos and so on, that they should care about and it should be high up in their voting. Now, again, does that mean voting for Clinton? No, because if you had a if you cared about the issues that Black Lives Matter has brought to the fore, what would voting for Clinton do for that, right? And again, I totally, you know, we totally understand the fact that that Trump is immediately right off the bat and through the campaign a direct threat to working people and especially people of color, and that the fear is enormous. But Clinton, a vote for Clinton, would not have cut off, you know, the right wing. At all, actually, the right wing still would have been doing attacks here and there. They wouldn't have been emboldened as much with Trump getting elected, but there still would have been attacks from the right. There still would have been a growth of the right, and there still would be policies coming down that would actually hurt people directly in terms of, for example, the militarization of the police, that not being challenged by the Clinton administration and all that. The rhetoric of you know, believing in diversity, but then continuing the policies that Democratic Party administrations, where they control the cities and so on, are continuing, that hurt people of color, that hurt working people in general. These things would have continued and shifted to the right under Clinton. Clinton had plans to privatize Social Security. Who's going to get hit worse by that? It's going to be people of color, you know, percentage-wise, you know. I mean, aggregate-wise, it's going to be probably people, you know, white people or whatever, but percentage-wise, the population is going to hit hard people of color. And other things that Clinton had in mind, the wars, who's going to get dragged into the wars, you know, et cetera. So, again, if you outline the difference between the Democrats and Republicans, there are differences. If you outline what Trump, the disaster that Trump is going to be for working people of all ethnic and racial and gender background, you know, identities, that is absolutely the case. It's going to be a horror show. The question was, is the way to stop that, right, to vote Democrat? Absolutely not. Again, what is the symbiotic relationship? What is the relationship between Democratic and Republican parties? They both embrace capitalism. They both embrace imperialism. They both are using mass incarceration. They're both using the drug war, what's left of it. It is in decline, but it's still there. They're using the militarization of the police and racism to keep power. And whether that it seems implicit or explicit does make a difference, right? If there's somebody like Trump saying, bring back stop and frisk, and the movement in New York has embarrassed enough the powers that be, de Blasio and so on, to retreat on stop and frisk, at least on paper, right, then that is a difference. That is absolutely a difference, absolutely. But can you understand from that difference all the similarities? Can you wrap your head around the fact that there's more than one enemy out there? You know, Mumia Abu-Jamal said during the early on in the election, if a Trump victory is the price for revolution, so be it. Now, I'm not endorsing that statement. I don't quite agree with that. We don't quite agree with that in Socialist Alternative. But you see a glimmer of where that comes from. You see, it gives you a picture of the fundamental change needed to improve the lives of African Americans, of black people in this country, and everybody else, the working class as a whole. It's not going to be smiley face capitalism that says the right thing about racism and then goes out and does racist policies. It's not going to be smiley face capitalism that extols the virtue of capitalist exploitation, including the destruction of the environment, as far as human habitation goes, first and foremost, destruction of the environment, and doesn't, do anything to really go after that. Mouths the rhetoric about it and then supports, like Clinton did, fracking. It's not like here in Massachusetts, give you another example. And the examples are so many. And, I know some of you are not going to believe the example. Some of you are going to be like, well, there's still the most important thing is that the right wing doesn't get emboldened by a Trump victory. And that justifies a vote for Clinton in and of itself. Well, two ways to think about that. Even if you're right, which I don't think you are, because there's so many other issues that unfortunately cut deeper even than racist language and attacks and so on. There's issues if you're getting thrown out of your home through mass evictions, police brutality infused with racism, etc. And that's not to minimize anyone's suffering by the horrible, if someone says something racist to you, that sticks with you your whole life. That's not to minimize that. It's just to say that where we can't be in the business, we can't be in the organizing mode of picking, seeing this whole bunch of evil out there in terms of racism and in terms of attacks on working people's living standards, attacks on the future for youth in this country, and cherry pick out which is worse and then vote just on that while emboldening and empowering a whole array of attacks that will not only hurt worse in terms of material lifestyle, in terms of everything you can think of, even psychology, but that will also embolden the right wing, that will also help the right wing in its organizing and in its growth. Even if that's not an immediate sort of sugary jolt from a Trump victory, it's from the policies that open up, that make openings for the right wing. It's for turning a blind eye to the right wing. I didn't see Clinton out protesting white supremacists. I didn't see Clinton out targeting. Why is there still remnants of the KKK in this country? Why can't they be wiped out? That's free speech, I guess, from a Clintonian or a Democratic Party standpoint. Not from our standpoint, by the way. Socialist Alternative. No free speech for fascists. They don't get any public platform at all. That's our position. That's not the position of the Democratic Party. So think about, that reductive to one issue, to one, array of issues in a general larger array of many faceted issues. You're going to vote, you're going to go in league with the Democratic Party, the corporate party, right? The party that has in the past supported racism, Jim Crow, the party of the slave owners originally and all that. And you're going to throw your lot in with them rather than doing the necessary work that has been done in other countries successfully to build an alternative political party, to build a party, a mass left party, a party for the 99%, a party for working people in all the diversity of the working class in the United States. That's what's got to happen. A vote for Clinton, and the way people were arguing, some people for Clinton, set that back, right? What are we going to face now? We're going to face more lesser evilism. We're going to face more throwing in with the Democrats out of desperation, not seeing a way out. And there is a way out. There's many ways out of the two-party duopoly, but nope, not seeing that. That's got to be off the table now for a lot of liberals, especially the ones that control, the upper middle class ones that control some airtime, some print, space on the internet and so on. They're going to go all out now, double down on the Democrats, even if they criticize them a little bit, people like Michael Moore and so on, even if they criticize the Democrats a little bit, they're going to double down with that. Well, you might want to look at Black Agenda Report. You might want to look at Socialist Alternative instead. Look at places that are that didn't lose it over the elections, that understood, that had a good analysis prior to the elections of what was going on, and understood also what the election represents. you're not going to see people in, like in Social Alternative or Black Agenda Report, many other places that don't get much mention. You're not going to see them saying, oh, let's compromise with Trump. Oh, let's see what how it goes with Trump. Even Sanders and Warren were saying that. Now, they're also criticizing him, but they're also saying, well, if he puts forward this agenda that helps working people, I would like to be part of it, blah, blah, blah. No. Because anything that Trump does, if it seems to be beneficial to working people, it's just a screen for 100 other things that are going to hurt working people. Anything that Trump does that's not explicitly racist is just a screen for 100 other things that are going to be racist to the core, that are going to hurt people. So unless, and this is a possibility, this is a strong possibility, unless we build a movement strong enough to not only stop Trump, but to actually make gains while Trump is in there, make gains on the street, put so much pressure on the system that in order to survive, it feels it has to make concessions. There are plenty of examples of conservatives either that came in conservative and then tacked a little more progressive while they were in there based on mass movements, or straight out conservative reactionaries, actually, like Nixon, who get elected with the worst intent in mind, the silent majority and all that. Remember, that's kind of reminiscent of the discussion around who voted for Trump, you know, that with the same distortions, the same conclusions that were wrong in some cases. But because of the mass movement that started out against the Vietnam War and blossomed into movements for women's rights, Black Power movement, the the environmental movement, et cetera, then you had some of the most progressive legislation in U.S. history passed under the Nixon administration, not because of Nixon, but because the system as a whole had to make concessions, it felt, in because of a mass movement that they felt was going to get out of control, their control, and become truly revolutionary, which it did not. It was a mass movement. Didn't become revolutionary. But when you have troops in the army organizing in a radical way in the army in Vietnam, when you have a revolt of the troops, which is not talked about much in the context of the mass movement of the 60s and 70s, but you had a working class revolt of the troops, that woke up some people in the Nixon administration and in the capitalist class itself and said, wait a minute. If you double down on, sorry, I use that so much, I don't even play poker, but if you double down on Vietnam and continue with this war, maybe nuke North Vietnam or whatever, and you've got this, you've got generals that can't even order their troops into battle anymore. If you've got people fragging their officers because they are so disgusted with the carnage and murder of the war for nothing, for U.S. imperialism in a little backwater to just control every last part of the globe, forget about it. No. And that's what people said. That's what people decided, you know. And troops coming back here and even someone like John Kerry, for God's sake, protesting, people throwing their medals away and so on. This had a profound effect on the psychology of the ruling class. And if they understood their own system, they probably would have been able to say, well, look, it's still, except for the troop revolt, it's a largely upper middle class movement. It is reaching down in the population more, but it's not, the economic conditions really aren't there for a mass revolt or revolution or something. I mean, that would be a slightly plausible, I don't agree with it, but slightly plausible, because things could get out of hand, slightly plausible way of looking at it. Without understanding of capitalism, without understanding of class analysis, but also because the revolts happening in other parts of the country, the ruling class said, we can't take that chance. And this is in the 60s and 70s. We're going to have to make concessions. And they did. Now, Trump, in his ignorance, in the Trump administration's ignorance, they're going to overreach. They're going to pretend they have a mandate when they don't. They're going to believe the propaganda they spew out, and they're going to believe the propaganda of the system, even the liberal propaganda about who's responsible for Trump, and they're going to go for it, right? And it's not going to I think they're going to be able to do some really horrible things, and that's certainly their intent. But if a mass movement develops against that, it's going to have a lot more strength than people realize, because these things, whether it's Trump, the Trump administration itself, whether it's the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party, it's not like history just disappears every 4 years and there's no antecedents, there's no roots to this. The roots to this moment that we're in now with Trump, a Trump administration trying to extend a feeble, crippled, that's the wrong word, a weak and disastrous, no way out capitalism, then you have, that's the picture that's been developing. You know, Black Lives Matter didn't come out of nowhere. Occupy didn't come out of nowhere. The stuff you're reading about the student debt bubble didn't come out of nowhere, right? The stuff you're reading about the new American precariat, you know, I mean, they're talking about full employment now. There are some jobs out there. You can see more help wanted signs than you could say 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But it's for jobs where you can't save anything. Jobs where the, you know, for the most part, except for a few places where $15 minimum wage has been won, and even then, that's not a living wage. In some places, it's just a very, very needed step up. But in a lot of places, the you know, obviously the wages are still stagnant, job insecurity still rules, unions are still under attack, and you know, it's not gonna, you know, the Trump administration is gonna worsen a lot of that, but it's also not, and by doing so, it's not going, it's going to continue to flame, to create the roots for more protest and more fight back. And again, we didn't need Trump to have fight back. We didn't need Trump to have resistance. There would have been resistance and fight back under Clinton administration, but Trump has triggered it faster, obviously. And again, that's not a good thing to say. I'm not trying to make that equation. Oh, people suffer more. They protest more. No, there could be a point where Trump gets away with something and people are stunned and they feel like there's no way out. And you have actually upper middle class liberals and some others. The results of the election have stunned them, but you have others that are saying, hey, the election woke us up. We want to get involved. And they're talking about socialist alternative, or they're talking about some sort of anti-Trump protest. And that's great. That's really excellent. A few minutes ago, I was getting into, like, you know, the differences and similarities between the Republican and Democratic parties and trying to make the point, look, you can have more than one enemy at a time. The big business has the electoral system so locked up by big money in this country that it's normal to be facing two or three or four really rotten candidates. If you go down enough to like the libertarians and like that, mostly two rotten candidates, obviously in the United States context, so far, that you know, people should be able to wrap their heads around the fact of two enemies, even if they have different tactics, even if they have different faces and PR. But no, lesser evilism, which is promoted by the corporate media quite a bit, if you notice. That is not the equation. That is not the answer a lot of people can wrap their heads around. They buy into the lesser evil thing, and it's disastrous. It's just disastrous. It just saps the energy from social movements. When elections come up, it takes away from and delays the time and the energy needed to build a political alternative that will include, yes, some electoral losses and so on. And people are talking about Stein and saying, you know, the Stein-Baraka campaign only got 1% or 2% or whatever it's ending up with, not the necessary 5%, which would have been a real step forward for independent politics in this country. And yeah, that's true. To a certain extent, it's true. It's like, yeah, it's not 5%. That's not good. But 1% to 2%, that represents a lot of people that saw millions, that saw beyond the two-party duopoly and lesser evilism despite all the pressure on them. And that is a good thing. That is a little step forward in terms of building consciousness for the need for a party for working people and youth that's not controlled by the corporations. And getting back into the similarities and differences, let's look at Massachusetts for a second, where the show emanates from. We had ballot questions. I'll put it in a context. Like in Worcester, in Social Alternative in Worcester, we put out a little newsletter called the Worcester Organizer for the community, and we couldn't run that many copies of it. I think it was a few hundred, maybe. Got them out around where we could at demos and so on, and we basically said before the election, you know, vote Stein-Baraka. You know, they've got good issues they're promoting. A vote for them will help these progressive issues that are not being promoted. Some of them were promoted a little bit by Sanders, but again, he retreated, supported Clinton, etc. And those were taken off the table for the most part. Look at Stein-Baraka's ideas they're putting out in terms of anti-racist, anti-imperialist stuff that the Democrats didn't touch. That's very good. look at the need for a vote for this campaign will increase the support for and the confidence in building and building left independent politics in this country. And then a vote for them can get you in, hopefully, if you're engaged at all in the campaign or you stay in touch with people or you vote for it and then get in touch with people, you'll be part of a movement for a third party that is progressive, party for the 99%, mass left party, etc. So, these are some of the reasons to vote for Stein, Baraka, and basically that was under severe attack. And the fact that anyone survived that a million or more people survived that and still stuck to that voting is a very positive thing. You won't see that, of course, from the liberals or from the corporate media at all. And yet that fact remains. Some people that really are left were demoralized by that. They forgot, again, the idea that you could have two enemies, that you could have similarities and you can have differences between Republicans and Democrats, but also a ton of similarities on basic things that are the most important things in a lot of ways, economic issues that then translate into how people are forced to live, or barely survive in this country. So let's look at really quickly some of the referendums here in Massachusetts. You had one referendum, you had some capitalist wanting to open a casino. And I'm always curious how people are going to vote on this casino stuff because how it's sold to them is jobs, 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 jobs. And you have the building trades very, very mistakenly sometimes going out and supporting building anything because it's building. That's a huge mistake. You don't want to build nuclear power plants. You don't want to build casinos. No union should ever say we want those things. There's plenty of other things to build and create jobs with, state, federal jobs programs and so on, city jobs programs. We don't need to prostitute ourselves for building what the ruling class wants, luxury condos and nuclear power plants and all that. And I say that with a lot of affection to my brothers and sisters in the building trades, and I realize it's the leadership that embraces suicidal things for the working class because they involve some sort of building. But we also have so this casino question. I'm wondering how people are going to go on that. There wasn't much propaganda for it. There was some, and there was nothing, no information against it that I was hearing in the corporate media, and yet people overwhelmingly voted it down. They could just smell a rat. They could just say, oh yeah, just what we need, another casino, another capitalist getting rich. No, forget about it. So then there was question two, the most important question in a lot of ways, where all this money was coming from the Koch brothers, these big finance capitalists, where they wanted, it's part of a strategy across the U.S. to privatize education, to attack and destroy the teachers' unions, to create a private educational system through charter schools, and to have the existing charter schools, before they've even made huge inroads in privatization, privatization, they have the charter schools sucking up money from taxpayers, from the money, the little bit of money that's available to public education, diverting more and more of that to these to this basically corporate welfare for private companies running schools called charter schools. And they claim that their education is better, and there's a lot of information to show it's actually worse, that they just rig through not having to educate everybody, they rig the system to make themselves look good, et cetera, et cetera. And you wonder, and the charters, there's so much money going into increasing charter schools in this country that you wonder if people can withstand that kind of propaganda, because it was huge. And all the liberals, the Jim Browdies and the Marjorie Egans and all the liberals supported question two. Seth, what's his name? That new congressperson, Obama, Clinton, Hillary Clinton, they all support charter schools, right? That should wake people, that in itself should wake people up about what their agenda is. They are for the 1%. They're of the 1% in many cases and for the 1%. They're for corporations. They're against working people. This, of course, includes Trump and all the conservatives. And we'll get more into that in a minute, too, like we already have started to. So on question two, and by the way, I have to give our legal ID here. We're WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. We call ourselves Tufts Educational Radio, Tufts Free Form Radio, Tufts Free Form Commercial Free Community Based Radio. We have a lot of names, and they're good names. And we thank you for listening to 91.5 FM WMFO, and go to WMFO.org to listen live streaming or to listen to the archives. And you are listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective here on WMFO. And just to finish the thought, basically we are talking about the elections mostly today, but in a way you probably haven't heard about for the most part. And we were just talking about things